or correct me, please raise your hand.
Please say something. Okay. thank you very much. Okay. It really is a tremendous pleasure. The nostalgia is amazing to come back here. Also, there are source sheets. Has anybody not gotten any source sheets? Okay, there's a few more here. Okay, good. So I want to thank very much Rabbi Waxman. It's such a warm welcome. Every time I come, it's absolutely wonderful. And it was Rav Reich had approached me and asked me if I'd be interested to speak. This is I gave a shiur, Torah and Science, back at the Young Israel Century City in L.A. So this is fairly similar to that. It was on Parshas Bereishis about a year and a half ago. So this is follows a lot of that. It also follows the there's a sefer by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks called Science and Torah, the Great Partnership. So that if this follows to a large extent the kind of the ideas that were contained there. Although some of you, many of you probably don't know, but Rav Yamer's father, so I shouldn't be standing here actually, Rav Yamer's father, Dr. Max Jammer, Professor Jammer, was really a Ben Torah, a gadol in science and in Torah, wrote a book about Einstein and religion. I've read parts of it. Really, it's fantastic. And so he, you know, many of the issues, so Professor Jammer would be the right person to stand here. So, you know, by the way, the things are very much, there's a lot of similarities. When I was here in a Shemitah year, so it was 35 years ago, and the dorms, there was no air conditioning or heating. So you guys have air conditioning. It's much better now, right? I wrote that, and it, you know, everything is, you know, there's a plenty of food. The first word I learned was miyutar. I'd go over to every, because there was only a certain number of things at each of the tables. So I used to, is this extra? Is this extra? Could I take enough? You guys have, you can get doubles here. It's amazing. Very nice. And I really want to make a big hakara tatov to the yeshiva, because it's hard to explain to Moshe, my son, but I was a different person that I came out than when I came in. And the yeshiva had a profound impact on me. Very positive, changed the course of my life. Many of you won't really see that for many years, but it really did. There's a tremendous hakaras hatov for that. And the topic I'll be talking about today is I had the zechus of learning each of the chapters of the book with Moshe, and we went through it chapter by chapter and looked at it. So there are three different parts that I want to cover today. One is sort of the context. How does the Torah really view science, sort of in a general sense? And then, as far as being a Ben Torah, an Orthodox Jew, what are some of the values? Is there a value to having learning about science? How would it help to be a Ben Torah? And then finally, I want to go over just a few examples of, if you do understand science, does it bring extra beauty to your understanding of different psukim in Tanakh? Okay. So, now for the context. I don't know if you've seen the movie The Fugitive with Harrison Ford. So The Fugitive, he is a scene where Tommy Lee Jones he's the marshal chasing the fugitive, and so the fugitive turns around, points a gun at him, and he says, "I didn't kill my wife." And Tommy Lee Jones, who's just supposed to catch him, right? That's all he has to do. He says, "I don't care. Right? I'm just supposed to catch you." It's really, in many ways, that is the Torah's view of science, right? That no matter what science says, and there's many different things. What is science? Science may say X or Y, but we have 613 mitzvahs to do. It doesn't really matter what the next scientific paper that comes out. We have our mitzvos and we follow the Torah, period. The question is how, you know, science may be able to enhance things. Does Can science help us to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's very difficult to say that science can do anything like that. So the Rabbi Jonathan Sacks says that science tells you the what. You know, what is out there, what is in the world. And religion tells you the why, right? The Torah tells you why things, what is the meaning of life. And all science can do is measure things. The things that if you have better tools, better measurement tools, then you'll know a little bit more. Science gets closer and closer to some truth, to some measurements, but it doesn't really know anything. It certainly doesn't know what happened in the past. It certainly doesn't know what happens in the future. It measures what is today, and then you try to extrapolate and try to understand. But it's certainly by no means can one prove HaKadosh Baruch Hu through science, and you can't disprove. But it has nothing to do with faith. And we'll see that the Rambam, also, when he talks about the value of looking at the Bria, he doesn't bring in Emuna into it at all. It's not about believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there's a quote that is attributed to Einstein that says that religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. Right? That basically one needs certain issues of science that help you to get a deeper appreciation of religion, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, consistent with what we'll see in the Rambam. So, now, the Rambam also says that let's assume there's a contradiction, right? The Torah says X and science says Y. So the Rambam says that you either don't understand the science well enough, or you don't understand the Torah well enough. Because the Torah is, we know the Torah is not a history book, and it's also not a science book. But the Torah is not inconsistent with history, right? It certainly is consistent, and it's consistent with science, or at least science as it should be. And so therefore one has to, again, look at things in a deeper way. One of the famous cases that the Rambam had about, sort of if there's a discrepancy between science and Torah was in the times of, as many of you know, the Rambam had a great respect for Aristotle. So Aristotle said that the world, the universe existed in a steady state and always existed. In fact, many scientists believe that. The Rambam, of course, the Torah tells you that the world was created, had a beginning, right? So the Rambam was at a loss, right? Aristotle and the scientists of his day said there was no beginning, it existed forever. And he said, this idea that we just don't even understand either the science or the Torah, but I know that the world had a beginning, and that's what he struggled with. Now, there's another issue about the Torah that we know that many things are an allegory, right? So we don't have much issues when the Seder is going to come up in a few weeks. So when we say Uviyad Chazaka Uvizro Natuya, right? We don't assume HaKadosh Baruch Hu has any anthropomorphisms, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have an arm, a zro, it doesn't have a hand, and so the question is what parts of Bereishis, the creation of the world, what parts are allegory? That may mean something a little bit different, and what parts are to be taken literally. But there are many different levels. So, anybody know the Rabbeinu Bachai on Uvacharta Bachayim? Does anybody know the Rabbeinu Bachai on that? Uvacharta Bachayim, Nisavim, Parshas Nisavim. Nobody knows? Says that, what is Bachayim, what's the gematria of Bachayim? 70. So there's 70 different levels, layers to the Torah. And so, again, the idea that the way the Torah in just a few psukim tell us how the world was created could very well have many different layers to understanding. Sort of like Shrek, the movie Shrek. Right? Ogres, what do ogres have? Ogres have layers, right? The Torah has, Lahavdil, Torah has layers, okay? So, Now, the idea, Rav Schechter, when I was in Rav Schechter Shir, I was at YU after, Rav Schechter tried to explain this idea of, again, that the Torah would explain things, would state things, but it was for a time that was 3,000 years ago. So that not everybody had a certain background. The Torah was written for everyone. It wasn't written for the scholars, it was written for all of Klal Yisrael, all of humanity. So, therefore, When the Torah says the world was created this way, this way, this way, there would be lots of layers for somebody who has a much deeper appreciation to understand it. So he gave the Rashefta gave the example of if you took an apple. Well, he said he was born roughly around the time when the atom bomb had exploded, and he said when he was a little kid that they would teach him. He would teach him about what is an atom. So when he was 6 years old, you know, they were 8 years old, they would tell him, you know, what is an atom? An atom, oh, I know what an atom is, it's a small little particle. Okay. Then a few years later they said, no, it's not a small particle, it's really, there's a center and there's something flying around. He says, oh, then I understood what an atom was. And then a few years later they told him, no, that's not what an atom really is, it's really, there's a cloud, there's a charge in the center and there's a cloud around it. He says, oh, then I knew what it is, now I know. And a few years later they said, nope, that's not what it is, it's even deeper. So this again, this idea that there are levels that to understanding. And then again, that's the idea. Now, I won't go through much in terms of how old the universe is, right? The universe, clearly, there are two different shitas, right? 6,000 years old and 13 point something billion years old. Now, there are legitimate views. We don't know. Of course, we weren't there. The Torah tells us X, 6,000 years. So very, and I've heard people say over the years, oh, Chazal, you know, the Chazal didn't know modern science, therefore X or that, therefore they wouldn't have appreciated it. But that's not true. Right? So you will see the Chazal had a tremendous understanding. And even if you look at the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he had a technical training. I think he is an engineer by training, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He certainly knew and understood the modern science about the Big Bang and billions of years old. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe was firm that the world is 6,000 years old. So certainly one, you know, there are many different ways of saying it is absolutely 6,000 years. And the question is could it be through this issues of layers of understanding, potentially also billions of years old? Okay. So, five reasons of what understanding of science can help you with. So, if you look at source number 4, so it's the first page on the bottom. So this is from the Mishnah Torah, this is the Rambam. And this is a very famous Rambam from Yesodei HaTorah. But if you read, it says, the path to love and fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is not about believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is if you understand the Bria, if you understand what was created and how beautiful it is, you can appreciate more the awesomeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what He did for us, right? He created the world for us. Now, it's told that Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, everybody's heard of Rav Shimshon, right? Everybody heard this story? That he went to see the Alps. He was on vacation, went to see the Alps, and his Talmidim asked him, why are you going to see the Alps? Anybody heard this before? No? None of you? You've heard it? What did he say? Yeah, so he told his Talmidim, when I go up to Shemayim, Hashem is going to ask you, did you see my Alps? Did you appreciate them? Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world in its majesty and its glory for us to enjoy, right? We know, right, what does a Nazir have to bring Karbonos? Right? Because he denied himself what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. Denied himself the Yayin. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world for us to enjoy. Now, I want to give three examples of this. So, here's a question. We live here. The assumption is, by the way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created the earth. Right? We live on the earth. Could have created the earth. Right? But yet He created billions of stars. There are billions of stars. We see them. Why? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create billions of stars? Anybody know? They're out there. Whether or not there's life on other planets, we don't know. The Torah is silent about that. But why did the HaKadosh Baruch Hu created billions of stars? Why? Anybody know? You look up at the heavens. It's beautiful. So on the one hand, you could say, well, gee, to show his awesomeness, right? But if, in fact, it could be even more than just saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this, if we have awe of him. So if you look at source number 5. So there was there's a paper that was published where, so for those of you, again, we'll talk a lot about the quote-unquote Big Bang, whether or not the Big Bang did occur or not, but again, that's the modern scientific theory, that that the world, the universe, was all created in a very small, all the matter of the universe was in one small spot, and according to science, it was just the light elements, helium and hydrogen. We're made up of carbon, many other, in the earth there's iron, there's a lot of elements of the periodic table that did not exist at the Big Bang. And so according to science, how did we get carbon? We're made out of carbon, right? Hydrogen, helium, you don't create life out of those. So it turns out that when stars are created and then they explode, right? Nova, stars explode, the intense energy and the heat creates heavier elements. And that's how, and so stars had to be born and die over and over again so that the elements that we're made out of can occur on Earth at some point. So again, so not just the awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the billions of stars for us, that we are the output of that. And it could not have happened, right, that it's all for this purpose, not just for the awe. That's a possibility we don't know. That's just one possibility. Now, what's a second? So a second issue is, you know, so one is come to study the world so that you can come to love and fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So another one is Vikiv Shuha. Right, what is Vikiv Shuha by Adam HaRishon? We all know. What is it?
To settle the world.
But it's Kivshua means to conquer the world, right? It means that you're not settled, but we learn Peru or Ravu, right? So on and so forth. But it's Kivshua is conquer the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us all of the basic ingredients, and we're supposed to conquer the world. So when you think of technology, to be able to fly, to have the internet, to be able to talk to anybody, it's all part of Kivshuha, right? We're supposed to be partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in completing the Bria. And these are all, this is all that was laid in the ingredients, and we're uncovering it, helping HaKadosh Baruch Hu it says, when we say Kiddush, right? Kivo shavas mikom lachto asher bara Elohim lasos. Do you need the last lasos when you say? Think about the pasuk for a second. Right, Asher bara Elokim. Right, so Kivosh avas mikom lachto. Hakadosh Baruch Hu rested. Asher bara Elokim, that which He created. Lasos. What is this? What is lasos? It seems like an extra word. So where does the lasos come from? And there are many different approaches to that. What are some possibilities? Asher bara Elokim, lasos. Anybody know? It's an extra word. Look at the pasuk. It's an extra word. Right? No. So one possibility, again, that lasos we need to do, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created things that they themselves would contribute and also do as well. Now, the third possibility of value, this is an easy one. Where, you know, the Talmidei Chachamim need to give pshat. They have to give a pshat din in, you know, when the rav of a shul, the rav of a yeshiva, there's something, a halacha that has to be paskin, right? So many times, the metzias, you have to ask a doctor is a very common case. You have to ask a doctor, right? Or you have to ask a scientist, right? It's not clear, right? It's very unusual for a rav to also know all of science. So very simple cases, right? So if it's on if it's on Yom Kippur, right? So you have to know very much, or on Shabbos, chol sheyesh bo sakana, chol sheein bo sakana. You have to, and that only takes a doctor, right, to be able to know, you know, whether somebody is whether somebody can fast, whether somebody has to use something on Shabbos. There's Rabbi Dr. Holkauer. There's the RJJ Journal. Many of you may have seen that. It's Halacha in Contemporary Society. So the question was, could you use an iPad in a hospital? And so he went through this whole thing, again, sort of this issue of, you know, you want to do malachos, you want to avoid malachos d'oraisa, try to avoid malachos d'rabbanan, even gezeiros d'rabbanan, whatever. So you go down the list of severity of the halachos that you have to violate. So in the iPad, he analyzed whether it's a resistive screen that your finger is touching, if it's resistive or capacitive. And that would have to, resistors use heat, resistance, right? So resistance has heat. That's a bigger problem halachically. Whereas capacitors, the charge goes into a capacitor. Some of you may have taken physics. Then the electrons go away. Okay, so but he analyzes this from a halachic perspective using his knowledge of science. So that's number three. Number four, and this is this goes to this issue of Or LaGoyim. So there's Professor Leo Levy. I don't know if any, it's a long time ago. You've heard. Really? How many years ago? A long time ago. Yeah, yeah. So he was a Machon Lev, and he. Somewhere. So there's a pasuk in Dvarim. So look at, you know, this is a pasuk I didn't really pay much attention to until I read this article by Professor Levy. So look at 12. So this is just a pasuk in Dvarim. Ushmartem va'asisem, right? You should be shomer mitzvos and do them. Kihi chachmaschem uvinaschem, right? Le'enei ha'goyim. You have to show that you have chachma and bina for the umos ha'olam. Asher yishmun es kol ha'chukim ha'ele v'amru rak am chacham v'navon. The goyim have to say am chacham v'navon. This nation, the Jews, are a wise people, and we will follow their God. We will follow what they are telling us because we have respect for them. So there's a real, and the Gemara in Shabbos also, which is the next one, number 13. The Gemara in Shabbos says that if people have the ability to study science, the motions of the planets, that one can be can gain respect from the Goyim, and be in fulfillment of this pasuk. And it's very interesting that, again, the Or LaGoyim is a very important issue. If you go to page 5, it's the last page. I don't know if you probably can't. I don't know if you can see it on the bottom. I was in Paris in January, and it's the International Year of Light. So the UN declared 2015, the International Year of Light. And Ahmed Zewail was speaking. He's a professor at Caltech. He was also on the list. He's a Nobel laureate and on a list who, when Egypt had their elections, he was on the list of potential presidential candidates. So Ahmed Zewail puts up about the science of light, the scientists, and he says there the golden age of Islam. So okay, the last name on that list, if you can see it, is the Rambam. Okay, so I was there. He's claiming. He says, you know, he says, and the Jew, and you know, we had the Jewish scientists, right? I think he said Moses ibn Maman, right? That's what he had. And so the Rambam was a scientist. Rambam also was a great Talmud Chacham. But the Or LaGoyim that clearly, you know, a thousand years hence, right? Or this was 800 years ago, that people will remember the Jews that had the respect of the Goyim. Now the last of these issues of the relevance, right? So the value of the Torah, the value of science. So we believe firmly in Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebaalpeh, and we rely on Chazal, on the Chachamim, to tell us how to live our lives. Right? What if Warren Buffett, I assume most of you know who he is, multi-billionaire, comes over, and he's made tons of money. He comes over and he tells you, I'm going to buy a stock, and I want you to buy it too, because I think, I'm sure you're going to make a lot of money. You have to throw your hands up and say, you know, I don't know anything. He's clearly a billionaire. I'm going to follow him, right? I'm going to have respect for him and follow him. And it's just amazing how our Chazal had certain insights. So they're telling us how to follow halacha. But they also had, when it came to science, certain insights that unless they had Ruach HaKodesh, unless the veil that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would lift up a little bit, that they would know things that were nearly impossible for them to know otherwise. So this is, if you look at number 7. Look at source number 7. This is the Ramban. And I put asterisks there because as a scientist, I'm astounded by this Ramban. I just don't understand it. So now this was in roughly the year 1250. And this is the Ramban on Bereishis. Look now. By the way, I should ask: who here generally knows what the Big Bang is? By the way, generally, okay. But the idea that somehow there was this very small space, right? Very small, tiny, and all of the matter. Think about this: all of the matter in all the universe was collapsed into this very tiny spot, right? That which makes no sense whatsoever. Right? Look at the Ramban. At the briefest instant following creation, all the matter of the universe was concentrated in a very small place, no larger than a grain of mustard. So, you know from other halachas, the grain of mustard is a small thing. The matter at this time was so thin, so intangible, that it did not have real matter. From the initial concentration of this intangible substance in its minute location, the substance expanded, expanding the universe as it did so, right? So Kadosh Baruch Hu created this thing in a very small space. All, again, think about it. All of the mass in this one small spot. This initially thin, non-corporeal substance took on tangible aspects of matter as we know it. Some of you may have heard of the Higgs boson, which was called the God particle. That's it. This is what, I don't know if it is, but it's possible. The Higgs boson, light doesn't have mass, right? Light doesn't have mass. We know electrons, right? This table, atoms have mass. The God particle, the Higgs boson, was explaining, scientists did not understand why the table shouldn't be like light, which has no mass. And they finally found the Higgs boson, which would give mass. Well, look at that, right? This is what the Ramban may be saying. This initially thin substance took on tangible aspects as we know it. From the initial act of creation, from this ethereally thin pseudo-substance, everything that has existed or will ever exist was, is, and will be formed. The Ramban should get 10 Nobel Prizes. This, you know, when people were trying to figure out, is the world flat? Is it round? Does the sun go underneath the earth? It's very difficult. How in the world, unless the Ramban and our Chachamim, the veil was raised, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave Ruach HaKodesh. As Rabbi Waxman mentioned, my great-grand advisor, when you get your PhD, you have an advisor, like you have a Rebbe, right? Lahavdil. So my great-grand advisor, his name was Charlie Towns, Professor Towns. He invented the laser. He got a Nobel Prize in physics. So he was also a very religious Christian. So now he passed away just a few weeks ago. He was 99 years old. So we were having dinner with a few people, and after everybody else left, I went over to him. I said, I wanted, because I knew that he was religious, I said, I wanted to hear his insights. There was a moment, okay, and there's a whole statue in his honor. There was a point in the late 50s where he sat on a park bench in the morning. He had a pad with him, and it just came to him, the idea of how a laser would work. Right, we take it for granted now. So I asked him, I said, tell me about that moment. And he said, that moment of scientific inspiration, I believe, this is a Christian speaking, I believe there is no difference between that and revelation from God. Right? That there was Ruach HaKodesh. He felt that way. And this is what our Chazal had. And again, it's as if Warren Buffett tells you, buy this stock. Our Chazal is telling us that there's something deeper that they have. So I think it's amazing. If you go to number 6, by the way, there's another one. Think about this. This is Rav Sadia Gaon from roughly the year 9-something. In his the Sefer Emunos Videos. And it says, you know, many of you are familiar with the conservation of mass, conservation of energy, right? That mass cannot be destroyed or created, only made it to change shape, right? Now this, go back 300 years, this didn't really exist, right? Look what Rav Sadia Gaon said. A created object can never annihilate another object in any way. Even if it is burnt with fire, it can never be annihilated. It is impossible to destroy something to the point that it becomes nothing. For only the Creator can do that. Right? E equals mc squared. If the mass goes away, it's converted into energy. And energy gets converted into mass. Right? That's what Rav Sadia Gaon is saying. Right? Centuries before Einstein came along. This is truly amazing. Okay. Now, so those are the five things that I, you know, and there are many more. So value that one can take away from science. Now, I want to just give some examples of if you understand science, that can help you appreciate some of the things that you say, right? So, by the way, somebody calculated. There's a very famous chemist from Harvard. So I was asking him, without, you know, nothing about religion, I just said, you know, how did life come about, you know, on Earth? He said, frankly, we don't know. He said, even if there's evolution there's evolution, there are too many pathways. The universe isn't old enough. Again, this is somebody who has nothing to do with religion. The universe isn't old enough, according to him, to produce life. In fact, I've read somewhere, a horse, it would take to create a horse with all the different possible pathways and, you know, for trial and error, that it would, the universe is, even according to the 13 billion years, it's not old enough yet. So again, the idea that scientists today, there has to be something, we know it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, moving everything forward, moving everything towards what we have today. Now, I'll ask you a question. In the first pasuk of Bereishis, there is there's choshech and or. What is darkness? Does anybody know? What is darkness? Absence of light. Absence of light. Possibly. Dark matter. Possibly. Maybe not. Could be dark matter. But there's another there's lots of possibilities. It seems from the sukkim that choshech was a creation. Right? It was a something. Choshech was a something, not a nothing. Right? But how would it be dark matter, by the way? And why do you have to separate the light from the dark? What is a separation from light and dark if it's dark matter? I don't know, you may be completely right. But how is that? So here's a question. Go to the sheet, and next, it's page 4. Does anybody know, say, dark matter? Does anybody know, how does a black hole work? You've heard of black holes. How does a black hole work? Gravity. Gravity. How does it work? Gravity. Yeah. Let's look at page 4. So if you look on the bottom, so Einstein was this issue of relativity, that space-time gets warped. So light, it turns out light may not have mass, but it has energy, and energy and mass is similar. It has momentum, and space gets curved. So literally, this was proven by measurements. Light doesn't travel in a straight line. If there's a star, a massive thing of gravity, the light will actually bend around the star. Okay, so light is affected by gravity. something not intuitive. So here's this idea. Let me take a photon, a piece of light, and if I take a piece of light, right, just or anything, I take a whose iPhone is this? I don't know. I'll just throw it up in the air. If I throw up the iPhone in the air, it'll come down, right? If I throw it up faster, it'll eventually come down. There's something, however, does anybody know? If I throw the iPhone up high enough from the earth, what'll happen? If I put enough energy in it? Escape velocity. Who said that? You're a ringer in here. Okay. Escape velocity. It'll escape from the earth's gravity. Now, a photon, of course, is going very fast. 186,000 miles per second. So the photon is going up, and it'll escape. Right? You shine a light, a beam of light. Shine a light, goes up. If the Earth was so massive, there was so much gravity, that light beam, if you would look at it, the light would go up and it would turn around and come back in. So if there's enough mass, enough gravity, light could not escape, and that's a black hole, more or less, right? So let's come back to this idea from the Ramban, right, from many other people. All of the mass of the universe came from this very small space, right? All the mass. Well, that means that gravity was incredibly dense, which means the light couldn't escape, right? Light couldn't escape. So look, and then, of course, things went outward, and as things went outward, gravity per unit area was much less, and eventually the light could escape. If you look, so look at, you all say this every morning, right? Look at 9. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech. So, according to, there are three times in the Torah that it says, uses the word bara, right? Create from nothing. The first one is the world, right? The first pasuk. This third one is the Nishmas Chaim, the man, Adam. The second one is a little bit more difficult because we're not exactly sure, but it's mentioned in terms of the beasts. So, the question though is, right, it says, Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech. So it says light wasn't created. Light wasn't created, right? It says darkness, right? Choshech was created, right? That dense matter. And then Yotzer Or, the Or was formed from that. Yotzer is, the Yetzirah is after, Yetzirah is not from nothing, right? Yetzirah takes something that exists and you form it. So the light was formed, when you say this in the morning, Yotzer Or. Kadosh Baruch Hu took this dense Choshech and created the light that we can all enjoy today. Okay, so that's an example. I want to give another example. And this is free will. So here's a question: you deal with this. I'll ask the question: how many people in here have thought about this problem in your life? Right? How does God know that? There you go. Violating causality. So how does God know the future and not control the present? How do you have bechira chofshis, free will? How does God know the future but not control the present? What are your thoughts? You must have thought, who here has at least thought about that at some point? Everybody has, right? Everybody. Okay, give me a couple of thoughts.
Outside the realm of time.
So explain to me that. Okay, I outside the realm of time. It's a great line, a bumper sticker.
So, I mean, we view things through time and, you know, everything's based on, you know, one thing happens after another. For God, we think God created time, God created speed, there was nothing. God isn't bound by time. So in God, I mean, I hate to explain it like this.
No, please, go ahead.
If God's looking at everything from on top, and, you know, let's take one of those old movie, you know, thingamajigs, I don't even know what they're called. You know, wheels? No. Film, there you go.
I have punch cards.
Went for a computer class that I took.
Okay, go ahead. Those old reels, yes.
He's looking at the whole film,
Yes.
He sees everything from beginning to end. It's not like he's focusing on one thing at a time.
So this is and by the way, so let's sort of look at exactly what's your first name?
Michael.
Michael, let's see what Michael said. And I again, is Michael right? We don't know. In fact, that's the whole point. Science doesn't know, but it's a possible way that we might understand what is this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the future, but we still have Bechira Chashis today. And this is a possible way of understanding and appreciating HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's sort of look at this piece of paper. So we are three-dimensional beings, right? Got height, width, and depth. Some of us have more depth than others. Okay, so depth. But we only exist in time in one instant. So there's now, and then now, and now. So we're not above time. We exist within time. We're essentially four-dimensional beings, but it's at only one specific point in time. Now let's assume for the moment, again, that's a great example. Let's assume for the moment we can't see yesterday and tomorrow because we're bound by time. And the Rambam, the Ramban, there's so many, the Maharal, discuss how time was a creation. Time was created along with the Bria. That there was no such thing as time before. In fact, again, whether Stephen Hawking, you know, wants to say that there is or isn't a God, but that's what he says too. Time was created, right? A brief history of time. That's what he wrote. Time was part of the creation. Now, so let's assume we're two-dimensional beings, right? So you said the movie, right? So if we are two-dimensional beings, right, this is our world. And so, kivayachol, let's assume I can now see things, if I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can see things, right, as a third dimension, an additional dimension. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created time, created all the dimensions. He's above time, he's above all the dimensions. So as this world walks through time, right, now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just like we can, right, as three-dimensional beings, can see ahead of it, behind it, we see all of it at the same time. It's exactly what Michael was saying. Now, let me go a little further. There's an issue. The speed of light, if you go at the speed of light, time, in theory, stops. Right? So if you... HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the speed of light, created time, and therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kivayachol, goes at the speed of light, he literally would exist, potentially, at all points along the timeline. Right? Now, we all, as a kid, right, I remember Moshe singing this, right, when you say, right, Hashem, right, up, down, and right, left, and all around. Hashem is all around, right? So we have no problem that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. We have no problem with that. But time is just another dimension. Hashem could exist every place, but if Hashem can go at the speed of light, he can exist also at every time. We can't, because we are bound in space. We can only exist at one place in time because we're bound by space and time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not. He's every when as well as everywhere. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees, just like, again, beautiful, sees the entire palette of human history, doesn't control it, but he sees it, he's there, he's in the future. And it's something we don't fully understand. Okay, now I just want to finish up with, and if you want, I can take some questions. There's a evolution is sort of a hot button in many ways in religion, right? Sort of, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man, right? But did man evolve? It's a hot button. I am not going to get into that. Okay. Although there are chachamim who were not bothered by the issues of evolution. I wanted just to make one point about evolution. Darwin, in his The Origin of the Species, right? People think, again, a lot of people think somehow evolution cannot be consistent. Somehow Darwin disproved God. But Darwin, it's not in your source sheet, Darwin actually said, I'll just quote for you Darwin, There is grandeur in this view of life with its several powers, having originally breathed by the Creator into a few forms. Right? So Darwin, even when he was thinking of his theory of evolution, did not, he still believed that there was within that the possibility of a Creator. Okay. But again, it's a very difficult and much more in-depth topic, so I don't want to go into it. But with that, I just want to end and just say that we should all be zocha to be able to look at science and help us appreciate and love and fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that He did and does for us all the time. Thank you. Stick around if anybody has any questions.